I'm sure you've heard people who, in the matters of morality, in the ideas of right and wrong, they express beliefs something like, well, I feel it's wrong for me, but other people have to decide for themselves whether it's wrong for them. I can't push my beliefs on other people. That type of statement is called moral relativism. The standard of right and wrong is appeal to the individual, one's own self. And since there's multiple of us, multiple selves, there's no one correct view on anything. So moral relativism is basically a belief that people can define truth in contradictory ways and still be correct. The relativeness of right and wrong can then vary by people. What's right for me might not be right for you. What's right for you might not be right for me. It can also vary by time. For instance, there's the argument that Paul did not allow women to address assemblies because of his current culture at that time. Oh, but now it's different. Or the argument that baptism was once by immersion only, but today we have different methods. Or the acknowledgement that instrumental music, well, yeah, the early church did forbid it, but we can allow it today. Or the argument that homosexuality, well, that yes, that they thought it was wrong once in the past, but times have changed. And so based on time, they say, well, what's right and wrong vary. And sometimes they will vary by events. In fact, it's formally called situational ethics. Depending on the situation, well, what's right or what's wrong might change. If you look out in culture, relativism is quite popular. There's a strong drive that's being made to deny the Creator in our government. It's been there for a long time. Hence, our laws are no longer viewed as being founded on principles handed down from a higher being. But instead, they're basically said to be standing alone. And for that reason, people start arguing that they can be changed. And since there's nothing to be conformed to, well, they can be changed at the whim of people. And we see that in secular government, and it's also being reflected in religion. All connections between the government and God are steadily being eroded, being abolished. That's why you have groups suing to have the plaques containing the Ten Commandments removed from public areas. They've just about totally wiped that out now. The drive has reached our schools. Any reference to Christianity and its ethics are basically forbidden, though you can find the schools teaching Islam. Because as they say, well, that's broadening the culture. But you can't teach Christianity. Moral relativism is a natural result of attempts to explain and enforce ethics without an appeal to an ultimate source. That's why people are doing this. Why is something right or wrong? And what's being taught is to appeal to a person's feelings. In other words, a person's conscience. That's the basis of basically today's idea of morality. I can't tell you how many notes I get, how many people write to me, and they're all based on feelings. Well, I feel this. I feel that. It's rare to find somebody actually arguing about what actually is right or wrong. Appealing to a person's feelings or conscience, that might work in a society that holds a consistent standard of right and wrong that's passed down from generation to generation. But we've cut off that distribution. We've stopped passing down morality. And we're seeing the results. Things are happening that we couldn't imagine happening years ago. I've told several people, you know, these ideas of school shootings. When I was young, it wouldn't enter anybody's mind. That would be just crazy. I was telling that to a young person. Oh, really? They've grown up hearing about school shootings constantly. They can't imagine a society where, oh, you don't do that type of thing? We got violence in the streets. I mentioned that this morning. We got violence in the streets as being approved by state officials and city officials. How do we get to that point? And we see it in the church when children trained in relativistic thinking grow up and then try to apply scripture with a relativistic view. See, modern relativism is popular, but it really doesn't explain why something is right or wrong. For example, can you explain why it's wrong to lie? A lot of people have trouble with that these days. Well, it's just not right. Why? Well, there could be times when it's all right. Why shouldn't I hit my brother? You know, how can sex be wrong if I love the other person? In other words, without understanding why, the immediate pleasures of sin obscure the reality of the consequences of sin. But what the Bible teaches us is that there is an absolute right and wrong, that God is the source of truth. In John chapter 14, John chapter 14 and in verse 6, Jesus said to him, "I am the way, the truth, and the life. No one comes to the Father but through me." Jesus is the way. Notice the singular. He is the truth. The Bible tells us that Jesus holds this universe together. In Colossians chapter 1. Colossians chapter 1. And starting with verse 16. "For by him all things were created, both in the heavens and on earth, visible and invisible, whether thrones or dominions or rulers or authorities, all things have been created through him and for him. He is before all things, and in him all things hold together." If everything is being held together by Christ, and this world was made for him, the world was made through him, well, then Jesus has a right to tell us how it ought to operate. He holds all authority, is what we're told in Matthew chapter 28. Matthew chapter 28. And in verse 18. "And Jesus came up and spoke to them, saying, all authority has been given to me on heaven and on earth. God, therefore, is the definer of what's right and wrong." That's the basis of what we believe as Christians. God has the right, and God is the source of what's right and wrong. Not only that, but God doesn't change. In James chapter 1, James chapter 1 and verse 17, "Every good thing given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. God does not vary. Right and wrong is fixed. In Deuteronomy chapter 32, Deuteronomy chapter 32 and verse 4, the rock, his work is perfect, for all his ways are just. A God of faithfulness and without injustice, righteous and upright is he. He is a rock. He doesn't change. He's a solid foundation. And the Hebrew writer tells us in Hebrews 13. Hebrews 13 and in verse 8, Jesus Christ is the same yesterday and today and forever. There isn't a change with God. God is eternal. And he remains the same. And his teachings, like himself, doesn't change. In Isaiah chapter 40. Isaiah 40 and in verse 7. The grass withers, the flower fades, when the breath of the Lord blows upon it. Surely the people are grass. The grass withers, the flower fades, but the word of our God stands forever. So then, in other words, since God is the source of truth and God doesn't change, well, guess what? Then truth doesn't change over time. Moral relativism doesn't have a foundation. Even people who believe in moral relativism prove that there is a higher absolute standard. How? Well, guess what? When a liar is told a lie, he gets outraged. Why? Because there's something higher than himself that says it's wrong to lie. He doesn't like that to be done to himself. An angry person doesn't like to get yelled at. Have you ever noticed that? Well, then there's a higher standard above the self. If everything was relative to an individual, then no one should feel bad when they're mistreated. I wonder what that would do with all the stuff that's going on in the streets lately. See, since they do get upset, then they realize that other people at least are required to follow a moral guideline. And it can't be the one that they want. It has to be something above them. Now, when we say the Holocaust was evil, well, the Germans argue that it wasn't evil for their society at that time. Or at least they did one time. If morality is relative, then no one can be condemned for doing what they feel was right at that time. There will be no reason to pull down any of the statues. Because, well, it was right at that time. It was right for that person. See, you can't apply relativism to yourself without undermining the very things that you're claiming that you stand for. But God's laws are not arbitrary. In fact, his commandments reveal his character. Take a look at Psalms 19. Psalms 19 and in verse 7. The law of the Lord is perfect, restoring the soul. The testimony of the Lord is sure, making wise the simple. The precepts of the Lord are right, rejoicing the heart. The commandment of the Lord is pure, enlightening the eyes. The fear of the Lord is clean, enduring forever. The judgments of the Lord are true. They are righteous altogether. They are more desirable than gold, yes, and much fine gold, sweeter than honey and the drippings in the honeycomb. Moreover, by them your servant is warned, and in keeping them there is great reward. Especially notice that last verse, verse 11. There is a benefit to keeping God's laws. They're not arbitrary. They actually make life better. Take a look at Jeremiah. Jeremiah chapter 32. And in verse 37. Behold, I will gather them out of all the lands to which I have driven them in my anger, in my wrath, and in my great indignation. And I will bring them back to this place and make them dwell in safety. They shall be my people, and I will be their God. And I will give them one heart and one way, that they may fear me always for their own good and for the good of their children after them. I will make an everlasting covenant with them. I will not turn away from them. To do them good, I will put the fear of me in their hearts so they will not turn away from me. Do you notice that how many times God mentions that? This is for their good. This is for their benefit. But he was giving them one way. A way that works. In the New Testament, we find in 1 John, 1 John chapter 5, and in verse 3, for this is the law of God, that we keep his commandments, and his commandments are not burdensome. God's commandments don't cause problems, they solve problems. Moses told the Israelites in Deuteronomy chapter 10. Deuteronomy 10, starting with verse 12. Now, Israel, what does the Lord your God require from you? But to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways and love him, and to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to keep the Lord's commandments and his statutes, which I am commanding you today for your good. If the commandments that God gives to his people are for their good, then violating them is detrimental to us. Now, that doesn't mean that a keeper of God's law will never have bad things happen to them. What God's talking about is the quality of life becomes better. You know, in school you learn multiplication. It gives us benefits. Able to figure out your wages or the amount of wallpaper that you have to buy. And you know what, though? 5 times 4 is 20. Not because I receive benefits from that knowledge, but because it's the reality. God's truths are absolute. They reflect the way things are. Now, I get benefits from understanding the way things are. But it's not the benefits that cause it to be true. God's truths are absolute. He tells us why things are right. He tells us why things are wrong. He explains what happens in the long run. Why is, for instance, sex outside of marriage wrong? Well, in Proverbs chapter 6, tells us one reason why. Proverbs 6 and verse 32, the one who commits adultery with a woman is lacking sense. He who would destroy himself does it. Wounds and disgrace he will find, and his reproach will not be blotted out. Here's one problem. It causes disease. It causes embarrassment. People look down on somebody who commits adultery. Why should I help other people? example in Proverbs chapter 11 and in verse 26 or 25. Proverbs 11, starting with verse 25. The generous man will be prosperous, and he who waters will himself be watered. He who withholds gain, the people will curse him. But blessing will be on the head of him who sells it. When I am generous with what I have, other people tend to respond in kind. They act generously towards me. I benefit. They benefit, I benefit. If I am stingy with what I have, well, then people look down on somebody who is not generous. And when I have need, I'll find I won't have something from anybody else. Why is it wrong to lie? Well, Proverbs 12 and verse 19. Truthful lips will be established forever, but a lying tongue is only for a moment. Truth lasts. Lies change all the time. Why can't I hang around with my friend? Yeah, I know he's kind of stupid. He's a class fool, but why can't I hang around with him? In Proverbs 14, and in verse 6, a scoffer seeks wisdom and finds none, but knowledge is easy to the one who has understanding. Leave the presence of a fool, or you will not discern words of knowledge. Hang around with a fool, I'll start being foolish myself. I won't be able to tell the difference between right and wrong. I won't know what's good and bad. If you don't understand that, watch all the mob action going on. It just feeds itself. And nobody stops and says, is this really right? I got a letter this afternoon, I was looking at it, and I'm going, does people really believe these type of things? And sadly, the problem is, yeah, people have this idea in mind. They don't check out the truth. They don't see what the Bible actually teaches. They only see what they want to see. If we're going to understand truth, truth requires a relationship. Going back to Deuteronomy chapter 10. Deuteronomy 10 and verse 12. Now Israel, what does the Lord require from you but to fear the Lord your God, to walk in all his ways and love him, and to serve the Lord your God with all your heart and with all your soul, and to keep the Lord's commandments and his statutes which I am commanding you today for your good. If I'm going to understand the truth, I need a relationship with the giver of truth. I need to love God. Absolute truth doesn't change. But absolute truth doesn't do anybody any good if it's not accepted. I can't accept absolute truth if I don't apply it to my life. You know, like a parent with a rebellious teenager, you can state the way things are, but it's not going to sink in unless the child loves his parents. Take a look at Ephesians chapter 6. Ephesians chapter 6, starting with verse 1. Children, obey your parents in the Lord, for this is right. Honor your father and mother, which is the first commandment, with a promise, so that it will be well with you and that you may live long on the earth. Fathers, do not provoke your children to anger, but bring them up in the discipline and the instruction of the Lord. Notice what's at the foundations of this. Children have to love their parents. Parents have to love their children. And it's for that reason the proverb writer tells us that if we're going to learn the truth, it has to start out with a respect of God. In Proverbs chapter 1, in verse 7, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of knowledge, but fools despise wisdom and instruction. It has to start off with a fear of God. That's why we're losing ground so badly. People lost their fear of God. In Proverbs 9 and in verse 10, the fear of the Lord is the beginning of wisdom, and the knowledge of the Holy One is understanding. Where do we start when we start talking with others? There has to be an idea that there is a standard that we all must uphold. There's a standard that we have to all follow that is bigger than any one of us. Because if it's bigger than each one of us, then we can be held accountable to it. But then that has to go back to, then we have to acknowledge that God exists. That God has the right to tell us what's right and wrong. It won't be found in what I think, or what you think, what I feel, or what you feel. It has to be found in something that doesn't change, and that's God Himself. If there's anyone here today who is not a child of God and would like to become one, we always leave that opportunity for you. For those who are children of God, would like to pray as your brother on behalf. Why don't you come forward as we stand and sing the song that was selected.
Oh, yeah.